We're doing Chafetz Chaim, we're up to page Tzadi Beis, Klal Gimel, Halacha Zayin. We'll dedicate our learning tonight to the speedy recovery of Rina Chana Bat Sarah. Hashem should send their speedy recovery, B'toch Shar Cholei Yisrael. Veda Od, I want you to know further, says the Chafetz Chaim, Klal Gadol V'Ikar B'Inyanim Eilu. I'm going to tell you a great rule, a fundamental rule, with regards to these things. Im Ro'e Adam She'Diber Davar U'Asa Ma'aseh. If one witnesses someone who says something or does something, be it something, you see him doing something that's between him and his creator. He's shaving with a razor. You know that's a biblical prohibition. He turns on a light on Shabbos. You know that's a biblical prohibition. Or he does something between him and his fellow man. You see him take from his friend's lunch. Now, you could gauge it positively or not. You could say, maybe his rabbi told him that before he finishes his gi, or he should turn on a light once every Shabbos. Maybe his friend told him he could have from his lunch. So you see something and you could judge it favorably. If that person that you just witnessed is someone that's a God-fearing person, so then you have to judge him favorably, even though when you see it, it certainly seems more like he did something wrong. In the balance, in the scale of your mind, it seems more likely that what he did was wrong, but there exists that possibility that what he did was actually right. So if you know him to be a God-fearing person, then you judge him favorably. What if he's an average person? He's not this exceptionally God-fearing person. He's an average person. But what's an average person? An average person tries not to do what's wrong. We all try to do what's right. And sometimes we don't succeed, right? Sometimes we make mistakes. So that's the average person. So then we say, if what you witnessed him do stands in the balance, you could just as well assume what he did was right as you can assume what he did was wrong. You don't know. So then you have to judge him favorably. If he's an average Joe and the action was an action which can be judged either way, so then you have to judge him favorably. As our sages taught, our sages say, he who judges his friend favorably, so then God will judge him favorably. This is included in what God tells us, blessed be he, judge your fellow man righteously. Included in that is, you should prefer to see him in a good light. You're not sure if what he did was right or wrong, view him in a good light. Now before we continue, you know what, let's finish the thought, and then we'll discuss the practical applications today. So we said, if he's a God-fearing person, so then even if it seems more wrong than right, judge him favorably, even though it seems more likely what he did was wrong. If he's an average person, so then if the case can be judged either way, then you should choose for the favorable way. But vafilu imadavar noteh yoter lechaf chova, and even if what he did seems more likely that what he did was wrong, nachon mod sheyeh adavar etzlo kmo safek, it is nonetheless very fitting that you should treat it as questionable. You're not sure. Ve'al yachiyo lechaf chova. Don't decide, yeah, I saw what he did. He did something wrong. No, maybe there are things you don't know. Uvemakom sheyeh adavar noteh lechaf zchut. And where the thing is more likely to be that he's correct, that what he did is positive, so then certainly it's prohibited to think what he did was wrong. Maybe you have every reason to assume it was right. And very often we see things which can be judged either way. Very often we see people doing things which can really be understood either way. And if you think about it, we spend our day judging people. Your kid's going to come home and tell you stories about what happened in class, and you're going to judge the teacher. And your friend's going to tell you about things they have with their parents, issues they have with their family members, and you're going to judge the family members. And your spouse is going to tell you about things that went on between her and her sister, between her and her parents, and you're going to judge them. And in life we do. We do judge, and we have to judge. You have a coworker, you have to decide to judge him favorably or not. Oh, I want to tell you a beautiful story. Not so beautiful, but it's an important story. We had a student here who was very, very nice. Really a sweet guy. And he used to work as a carpenter. And I hired him once. I said to him, I need to build a closet. We had just moved into a new apartment. And the space between the bathtub and the wall was just short, like a centimeter, so that the washing machine couldn't fit in there. The washing machine was supposed to stand between the bathtub and the wall. There was a space there. There was a faucet there. Everything was just set up for it. Now, a washing machine is heavy, and a washing machine vibrates, you know, moves a lot. So you need it on solid, grounded footing, right? So I asked him, I said, you know, I can't fit the washing machine in there. Could you build, there was a closet that used to be there. Could you strengthen that closet to the point where I could put a washing machine on top and it'll sit there? And so he did it, but he didn't have his tools here. He wasn't from Israel. He was European. So he borrowed my tools. Okay. I lend him my tools, and he does the job, and I pay him. I paid him very well for his time, and he told me this will last you. It'll last, even though it's a washing machine you're putting on top, it'll last until you move out of the apartment. So I was young. I said, fine, and I paid him, and he gave me back my tools, and I see that the bit that I lent him that drills into the wood that he used in order to put the wood together is taped closed. So I said, then what's that? So he said, oh, it's nothing. So I said, okay. He smiled. I smiled. But as I was smiling, I was thinking to myself, I'm paying him and I'm rounding up. I'm paying him top dollar. If he broke a bit, what does that mean it's nothing? You can't use a bit that was taped shut. You know, what are you going to be able to drill with that bit? And I left the bit in its place. And I said to myself, what kind of logic is that? He taped the bit closed? This is a carpenter. What does he think I can do? You know, a bit that's supposed to drill. There's no way that tape is going to hold it and you could use it. And I was thinking, at least he should have offered to take off some of the price for the bit. And I said to myself, I don't know if I want to hire him again. I paid him top dollar. He broke the bit. Okay, what's the logic? And it bothered me. And I said, the guy seems so intelligent. What's the logic? And he seems so honest. And it stayed with me, and I never got rid of that bit. Because I said to myself, I don't get it. In every other way, he seems smart and honest and fair and good and kind. I don't get it. And the bit stayed in my toolbox, and it sat by me. You know, it's one of those things where you look at it and say, I don't get it. And his smile, and he said to me, it's nothing. You know, if the guy would say, I'm sorry I broke your bit, fine. But it seemed so stupid to me to tape a bit as though that does something. Just throw it out. Tell me it broke and throw it out. But what? It just, okay. A few months later, tragedy struck and he passed away. And I really miss him till today. And then, about a year later, I'm going through my tools and I see that. And I said to myself, I don't need to remember that he did something stupid. I have good memories of this guy. I don't want to have bad memories of this guy. So I was about to throw it out, and then I took off the tape. And when I took off the tape, I saw it wasn't broken underneath. And what he said, it's nothing, is he meant a piece of tape got caught on the bit. It's nothing. It's just a piece of tape that got caught on the bit. I looked at it, and I saw the tape wrapped around the bit. And I thought, he broke the bit. What's the logic in fixing it with sellotape, right? When I took off the tape, I saw the bit was in perfect condition. He was right when he said it was nothing. Now how did I feel? You know, for months I was walking around thinking, what's wrong with this guy? And I asked him when he gave me back the bit. I said, what's that? Because it seemed so stupid to me to tape a bit with, you know, with scotch tape, with sellotape. And he said, it's nothing. Well, he was right. It was nothing. I didn't understand what he meant when he said it's nothing. I said, what's he saying it's nothing for? But I was polite, so I smiled. I said, okay, it's nothing. I put it in my chest, made believe it was nothing. Only after he wasn't around did I understand that he was right. It was nothing. So we learn about how we should judge other people favorably. So I find in my life that I'm always learning I should be judging more favorably. It's something that I constantly find that I have to do more. As much as I do, I got to do more. Even in a scenario like that where I thought I understood him. Ah, you see, I didn't. ובמקום שהדבר נוטה לחף חובה, לקו זכות תיבדה, יסור על פי הדין לדונו לחף חובה, ודנתו לחף חובה, ובשביל זה הלך וגינהו. Sometimes a person did something which can so easily be understood positively, and a person chooses to understand it negatively. And then he goes and speaks badly about the person. Levad shavar b'zal b'tzedek tishpot amitecha. Not only did the person transgress the Torah's commandment, judge your fellow man righteously, odavar b'zal yisur sipur lashon hara, he also transgressed in saying over lashon hara. Now, I think that everything we learned here is, in theory, very good. But in practice, I'll give you another example, which I've seen more than once. Couple gets married, and 2 days, 3 days after the wedding, I get an email. And the kala writes, she says, I thought I married someone pious, and the guy doesn't get out of bed for minyan. Could you talk to him? I thought he davens in a minyan. Now it's the third day of Shev Brachas, and he doesn't go to daven with a minyan. So, the first issue I have is, why can't she understand that he's very tired after a wedding? Shouldn't she be judging him favorably? But the second issue, which is maybe bigger than the first issue, but it's a real issue, and it comes up so many times, and that is that it says in Halacha what he does. The Mishnah Brura says something, we don't do like the Mishnah Brura in this, but nonetheless, the Mishnah Brura does write, the Chafetz Chaim, the same Chafetz Chaim we were just learning, he writes that it is correct that a chatan should not come to shul the 7 days of Sheva Brachot, because if he comes in, then the people won't be able to say Tachanun. And Tachanun is a very important prayer, so better he daven privately at home than cause everyone to lose their Tachanun. So the Mishnah Brura writes, so we don't, our custom is we don't go with the Mishnah Brura on that. Most people go to Minyan, at least part of the time after Sheva after their wedding, during Sheva Brachos, if they can, they make it. But Rav Feinstein held also that a chatan shouldn't leave his kala alone, even if that means he should pray at home during the Sheva Brachos. So I always tell the chatanim, tell your kala that Rabbi Feinstein held that if you're going to daven in shul, the kala has to come with you. You shouldn't leave her alone. So if she wants to come with you to a nice late minyan at 9:30 in the morning, you let her sleep late. Not the morning after the wedding. The morning after the wedding, you'll daven privately at home. And after that, if you guys have strength, so then if she wants to accompany you, suddenly she's perfectly okay with his davening at home. You know, if she has to get out of bed, she's also tired. But her expectations are that her husband's going to go to minyan, but she doesn't know the halacha. What I've found is that very often, people chastise other people about things which, if they really knew the halacha, they'd realize that the other person has what to rely on. And maybe the other person is even more correct in halacha. And that's why what the Chafetz Chaim writes over here, if you can judge him favorably, if it's more likely that what he did was right, more likely what he did was wrong, perhaps what he did was perfectly right and we just don't know it. Mm-hmm. Until you know enough halacha, until you verified, you shouldn't judge him at all. You know, there's a story about Rav Soloveitchik. When he used to put on his tefillin, so Rav Soloveitchik and Rabbi Feinstein were both concerned for an opinion in halacha that says that when you make the blessing on the shel yad, so then as quickly as possible after that, you should put on the shel rosh. And that's why Rav Soloveitchik and Rabbi Feinstein would both make the blessing on the shel yad, bring the strap around once or twice, wrap it around their finger 3 times, and then put on the shel rosh, the head tefillin. So the story is told of a balabayit that was standing, and he sees how Rav Soloveitchik puts on tefillin. And after davening, he comes over and he says, Rabbi, I wanted to explain to you how you should put on tefillin. I noticed you got it wrong. So Rav Soloveitchik listened and said, thank you very much, and went on with his life. But the truth is that very often we have such scenarios where people are correcting someone. The person might have done something even better than you're doing. Why are you correcting him? And even though you learned the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, well, maybe there are other opinions other than the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I was there when a guy went over to someone else and said, You know you should hold all four tzitzis in front when you say Shema, not only two. Why did he correct him? The Mishnah Brura goes with the Magen Avraham that you should hold all four in front, but the Aruch HaShulchan explains why many people don't have that custom. So just because one person grew up in a shul where everyone held all four corners together for Shema, but there's also an opinion and a custom not to do that. I know the guy who went over to someone else and said, when you put on your talis, you should put all four corners together and throw them over your shoulder. Not the way you do that, you put it over your head and just wrap like this. Well, why did he tell him that? What that guy did is in the Rosh, and it might even be better than what he did. There are a million examples of where people correct other people who said the other person's wrong. A guy listens to his neighbor, the Yemenite, say Birchos HaShachar, and the guy skips the blessing of Noten LaYoif Koach, he who gives the tired person strength. And he says, buddy, you forgot a blessing. No, he didn't. Shulchan Aruch also rules you shouldn't make that blessing. So most Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews don't have that custom. We do say the blessing of Hanoten Layaev Koach. But the Shulchan Aruch didn't say that. So the guy's doing what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Rav Soloveitchik, when he did Kiddush Levana, used to tell the same person, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, three times. So you could imagine, if one of us would be standing there, we'd be tempted, if we didn't know it was Rabbi Soloveitchik, to tell him, Rabbi, you're supposed to go to three different people. Don't you see that's what everyone else is doing? Yeah, but that's how he understood the Shulchan Aruch. That the Shulchan Aruch meant you could do it to one person. So there are tremendous examples where you see everyone doing one way and you see someone else and you say, hey, that's wrong. Who said it's wrong? Because we're not familiar with it. Before we say something, I highly recommend we go to a rabbi and ask him, can you tell me, is there a halachic basis for what so-and-so is doing? Because so often people correct one another when what the other person did is really halachically valid. So that's why, even though the Chafetz Chaim is writing, is it more likely what he did was right? Is it more likely what he did was wrong? I'm saying in our scenario, where we're holding, even if you learned in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and it's clear as day to you that what he did was wrong, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is one sefer. It's a very important sefer, but it's one sefer. There are more Sfarim out there. There are more customs out there. Let's hold our horses before we even judge him. Maybe he's in the right.